Welcome to season 4 of Purple Politics Nevada. I'm your host, Lucia Starbuck. The name refers to the fact that the state isn't red or blue, it's both. We are broadcasting live from KUNR studio in Reno. The countdown to the 2026 election has begun. We have an exciting lineup planned for the show this year, and we're kicking things off with what Nevadans might expect for the midterms. My two guests know politics inside and out. First, Sandra Cosgrove is a history professor at the College of Southern Nevada and the executive director of the civic engagement nonprofit Vote Nevada. Thanks for joining me bright and early, Sandra.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Let's start with a broad question. What can we expect this year?
I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, this is what we do in a midterm. We have to talk about who's going to be on the ballot. There's a governor's race. Why do we elect the public administrator? Those types of things. But then I also think national politics is going to play a bigger role locally. And the fact that we just have so many nonpartisan voters in the state now that we're not sure what they're going to do. So I think those are going to be wild cards.
Yes, lots of statewide races, pretty local races, too. And you brought up nonpartisans. Nonpartisans continue to grow in Nevada across all ages and in rural areas. And this isn't new. Nonpartisan registration surpassed both Democrats and Republicans back in 2023. Some is due to automatic voter registration at the DMV, but voters can click a party box later. What role do you think nonpartisans will play this election, Sandra, and kind of how can candidates reach them?
So the thing about nonpartisans is we don't know if they're going to turn out. There hasn't been a lot of polling. The parties are not really talking to them. Some of them are kind of mad. I know my students they're registered to vote, but they're very mad. So I think the party that figures out the strategy of talking to them and getting them to turn out is going to be key. And you bring up automatic voter registration, yet national numbers for the number of people who are declaring independent are exactly the same as they are in Nevada.
And you said you think national politics will play a role. We saw this week the Democratic National Committee announced it will spend millions of dollars to mobilize young people to register others to vote. They'll start with the Silver State and Arizona, focusing on Latino and Asian American Pacific Islander communities. What does this tell you? And is this kind of what you were thinking would happen?
I'm disappointed because what they actually said is they want to go find new people who are not registered to vote to register as Democrats. So they're going to spend millions of dollars going out and trying to find new people to register when we already know there's thousands of people registered as nonpartisan. Can't they spend any time or money just talking to those folks? Many of them are younger people. Talk to them.
Why do you think the parties are so avoidant to talk to nonpartisans?
Well, there was a Gallup poll that was just released this week, and what Gallup said they heard from people who declared as independents, we call them nonpartisans here, is they said they're mad at the parties. They don't like the way the country's going. They hate the continual fighting. And so I think the parties are assuming, well, those people are mad at us. Why talk to them and figure out why they're mad and fix things? Let's just go find new people. I don't know that they're going to find enough new people to make a difference.
Do you think that If you were to share a message with them, what would you say? What's kind of the winning strategy to capture voters who are pissed off with the parties?
Sit down and talk to them. I spend a lot of time in spaces with people who are registered nonpartisan. They want to be heard. They want somebody to listen to them. And unfortunately, the way our campaigns work right now, it's a lot of just yelling at you, not listening to you. So there's going to have to be a different strategy.
You brought up your students, and I know they share their thoughts with you in the classroom. What are their reactions to the election?
Right now, they want to vote for ideas and issues that resonate with them. And so they don't see that very much. They look at what the candidates are saying, and they're like, yeah, those are not my issues. Those are not the things that are impacting me. So I'm just going to wait until I hear or see a candidate that's talking about my issues. And so that's a different way of running campaigns. But I think if you have candidates this cycle that are willing to go out and talk to them, I think they can win over those voters.
The cost of living is a major issue here, from gas and groceries to home prices and rent. Have the current elected officials done enough, and will this issue hurt incumbents?
I think they say the words affordability. They talk about the high cost of living. But my students hear, okay, affordability, and we hear you about housing. And then next week, the tuition is going to get raised over at the Board of Regents meeting. And so there's this disconnect between we want things to be affordable, but we're also going to make it so that your tuition goes up.
Do students and voters across the state want to see concrete plans?
Yeah, they don't want to just hear the taglines or the quick little video you see on YouTube. What are you going to do to make it so that I can make rent and I have childcare and I have transportation?
Immigration is another hot topic, yet we're not seeing large workplace raids or clashes with federal enforcement officials in major ways like in other states. What's shielding Nevada from this, and does that have an effect on voters?
I think the major industries that run Nevada, so gaming, the resorts, mining, I think they have enough pull nationally to be able to push back against the Trump administration to say, we don't want to see you in our state. Also, we have a Republican governor, so I'm sure he has more of a direct line to the Trump administration. But I really, in Southern Nevada, I think it's the gaming industry being able to fight back on its own.
Do you think, having a Republican governor is kind of taking some of the heat off of Nevada, or some of the, or maybe being a target of the Trump administration?
I would have to say yes, because the states that are being targeted have Democratic governors. They tend to be blue states. And like you said, we're more purple, but we do have a Republican governor. And our Republican governor is a Western governor. He is a stay out of my state, leave us alone type Republican.
Nationally, Governor Joe Lombardo is considered one of the most vulnerable governors up for re-election. Why is that?
Because we're a purple state. And I think a lot of national people are seeing the number of nonpartisans that are up for grabs. If either one of the parties can figure out how to get those nonpartisans to vote for their candidates, not their party, they can easily win. And so neither party can say, we'll just turn out our base and win.
What is your pulse on the Democratic gubernatorial race? It's right now it's Democratic AG Attorney General Aaron Ford running against Washoe County Commissioner Alexis Hill. What do you make of that race so far?
AG Ford has been in Democratic politics for quite a while. So he is looking more like the establishment candidate. He's starting to talk more about his issues. There's not a lot of how are you going to do that? But I think Alexis Hill is a brand of Democrats you're going to see running because of what happened in New York with Zohran Mamdani, that you can win if you have a strong progressive message. And I'm seeing Alexis Hill tracking more that direction. And so we're going to have to see how the Democrats split in Nevada, whether they want to be establishment or go more that progressive route.
Ford is from Southern Nevada, Las Vegas. Hill is up from up north. How important is, I guess, coming from a place where most of the population is, do you need to come from Las Vegas to win governor?
I don't think so, because in this day and age of Zoom and electronic platforms, I could call Alexis Hill right now and get on Zoom and see her. And it's not that hard to fly back and forth and drive around. So I don't think that's going to play as big a role this time as it has in the past.
According to polling done by Alexis Hill's campaign, Ford had significantly more name recognition, but after reading positive statements about both candidates, voters were open to changing their mind and potentially supporting Hill instead. What does that tell you?
That things are volatile. And again, I even think base voters in both parties are listening for their issues. Are you going to talk about my issues that are impacting me? We saw that in 2024, and I think it's still true now and probably even more so. So I think both candidates, they can't just do, I'm for this and that. People want to know how. How are you going to do it?
Hill has also made her, marked herself different by saying that she doesn't support tax breaks for the film industry. That was a big issue that came up during the special session. What does that say about her campaign, and how detrimental was that the special session for Lombardo?
I'm not sure on the Republican side, but I know it was a bipartisan effort that killed that bill. And I think it had to do with the transferable tax credits, that when it's transferable, like the casino industry could buy them for pennies on the dollar and reduce their tax liability. I think that was the sticking point, not so much having the film studio in, but I think there was splits in both parties that got very nasty during that special session.
Definitely. And let's talk about the Northern Nevada congressional race. Republican Mark Amadei has been in office since 2011, and he has not had a strong challenger. What would it take for a Democrat or independent candidate like Greg Kidd, who we saw last election, to win that seat?
They need to talk to the nonpartisans. If you look at the CD races and you look at those districts, they almost have majority nonpartisan voters in all of the districts. And so if you can find somebody that has name recognition, that's not a carpetbagger from outside of the state, and that's the problem Kidd had, you're going to need to go out into the rural areas and talk to the nonpartisans.
What elaborate on the issues that you think that Kidd had last election?
But he didn't change his license plate. I mean, we all know if you're from Nevada, there's certain things that mark who is a Nevadan. You have to say the state's name correctly. You need to change your license plate and you need to understand our issues. He didn't do those things. So for people in the rural areas to trust you, I mean, when I go to the rural areas, the first thing I say is I'm a 40-year Nevadan. That's the first thing I say, because then at least I'm trusted because I've been in the state for a while.
Why do you think that's so important to Nevadans, how long you've been here or how Nevadan you are?
Especially in Clark County, because we have so many people that move in and out. New people come here and don't understand the longstanding fights and issues. And so they don't want people rolling up and proposing solutions that really don't fix our problems.
We talked about immigration and the economy. Any other top issues popping up this election you see?
Housing. And it's everywhere, even in the rural areas. Housing is the number one issue.
Have you seen any solutions from candidates running so far?
I know the governor had his affordable or accessible housing bill in the last session, and I know AG Ford brought it up this week. What I'm seeing is, because I am the chair of the Sunrise Manor Town Advisory Board, we do all the zoning variances on the east side of Las Vegas. We had our meeting last night, and we're already seeing developers wanting to come in and build on infill. Do smaller housing projects within the counties. So that is something that we haven't seen for years. It's happening now.
And are there any predictions you would like to make for the election?
I think candidates who can say to Republican voters or to nonpartisan voters, become a Democrat for a day or a Republican for a day and vote for me in the primary, I think that's going to be key. Because right now, that's the only way nonpartisans are going to be able to vote in many of these races, because they're shut out. But we have same-day voter registration. So somebody like Alexis Hill, if she can convince enough nonpartisans to be a Democrat for the day and vote for her in that closed primary, she could win.
And talk a little bit more about that. Is that a winning strategy? Is that something that nonpartisans even want to do when they go to the polls in June?
I don't think so. Because their identity is being independent, which is why I'm running a ballot question to say you don't have to change your affiliation. But I think there's enough young people, if she resonates with them and their issues, might consider it.
We'll definitely check back in later this year to talk about your ballot questions. Thank you so much for joining us bright and early, Sandra. I'm Lucia Starbuck, and you're listening to Purple Politics Nevada. We're talking about what Nevadans might expect during the midterms. I'm now joined by Matt Taglia, the Senior Director of Emerson College Polling. Thanks for being with us, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Your Nevada 2026 poll, published in November, put the gubernatorial race between Lombardo and the state's AG, Ford, in a dead heat. Lombardo seems to be walking this fine line to win over Trump supporters, but also trying to not alienate more moderate Republicans. Is this possible?
And, you know, Lucia, I think it is. So Lombardo has traditionally been, over his tenure so far, a fairly popular Republican governor in, you know, a fairly purple state. But his problem now is that he may be dragged down with the Trump administration and the view that folks have of the Trump administration. So when we look at approval ratings in this poll, Lombardo is now at 34% approve, 36% disapprove. That is a major swing since the previous poll, where we had him at 41% approve, 25% disapprove in 2024. So this is very much a fine line, as you said. I think it certainly is possible differentiating himself from the Trump administration, but there are a lot of risks here as well.
What happened? What made him so popular before, and kind of why has it started to go downhill?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't know that I can necessarily answer what made him popular. You know, there's a lot that goes into that. I think your previous guest was right in saying, you know, he was a Western style governor, and people appreciated that. He did differentiate himself from the sort of MAGA Republicans that we see in other states. But as far as trying to distance himself further from the Trump administration, I don't know how he does that. I think that he will really have to walk that fine line and talk about some of the issues that do matter to folks, like the state economy. That's going to be on top of people's minds come November.
He did start to wade into some more of these topics. For example, he's putting forward a ballot petition to restrict transgender athletes from participating in the sport that they identify as. What does that tell you that he's starting to take on more of those issues?
Yeah, and I think that that is a couple of different things. I think, for one, he is trying to activate that Republican base, because he is going to be dependent upon that come Election Day. But I think that there is a bit of more tactics involved there. We've seen, not necessarily in our polling, but in polling throughout the country, that that issue in particular, trans athletes, that is something that folks tend to agree on. They don't want trans athletes participating in women's sports in particular. And, you know, not taking a stand on whether that's right or wrong here, but I think that Lombardo is probably trying to look at those more sort of populist policies, or policies that are at least broadly popular, and appeal to a pretty wide swath of the electorate.
Yeah, for example, the other ballot question that he's strongly supported is voter ID.
And that's another one where folks tend to agree that voter ID, I know that that's not necessarily the party line for Democrats. It certainly is for Republicans, but we have seen across party lines that folks tend to agree that some form of voter ID and requiring voter ID is acceptable.
And I want to point out that your poll did not include Democrat Alexis Hill, who's also running for governor. What chances do you think she has?
Well, and this is where I disagree with your previous guest. I don't think that she has very high chances. This is based on both name recognition. Ford has pretty high name recognition, obviously. And then just looking at the fundraising numbers, you know, that's a steep hill to climb. I think that Ford has raised over $2 million. Hill, on the other hand, not quite as much. It's in the thousands. So, you know, absent some sort of major fundraising push, I don't see that as a terribly competitive primary.
Do you think she could rise to the top, like Sandra said, like newly elected New York City Mayor Mamdani? According to your organization, he was polling at 1% at the start of the race before the Democratic New York City mayoral primary.
That's right. And we were the only pollsters to find Mamdani winning in ranked choice voting in our final poll. Nevertheless, Nevada is not New York City. it's a very different place. The geography is very different. It makes it a little bit more much more difficult to campaign and to really raise your profile across the entire state. And that's, you know, unfortunately, especially true when you're based in the Reno area versus the Las Vegas area. There are just so many more votes down there. And so it's a very steep hill to climb, no pun intended. So that's not to say it's impossible, but I am not seeing yet, again, those fundraising numbers. That's not just an indication of the capabilities of the campaign. That's also an indication of, you know, whether or not you are getting any sort of traction. And I'm not seeing that traction yet. Of course, if that could change again, and we could end up polling that primary. But right now, it does not look like that's the case.
So you think it's difficult to campaign in Nevada, maybe for one reason, because of the large, just the how large the state is?
Oh, absolutely. Nevada is one of the most preeminent moving targets, as I'd call it, in the country. And there are a few reasons for that. One is the geography, as we talked about. But two, and I believe your previous guest touched on this briefly, is the high level of transients. And so that is it is the highest in the country, if I'm not mistaken. When we look at the voter rolls, we see over the course of about 4 years, so between presidential elections, a substantial number of the electorate has replaced itself. So folks moving out of state and folks moving in. So you really don't know who these people are necessarily. So in terms of campaign tactics and polling, it makes it really difficult to figure out who you're speaking to, who you're going to speak to, who you're targeting. There's a lot that goes into it, and that's why Nevada is probably the most interesting state in the country when it comes to state politics.
And that's why I love being a political reporter here. I'm not going to lie. Let's talk about how voters feel about the current elected officials. You mentioned Lombardo's approval ratings dipping. Granted, the poll was right after the government shutdown in fall, but Trump, Lombardo, and Nevada's two Democratic senators had high disapproval ratings. Okay, ouch. What does that tell you?
Yeah, so this, as you said, was right after the government shutdown, and both of Nevada's senators were a part of breaking the shutdown, which was not necessarily popular among Democrats. So both senators here in the 40s disapproval and between 28 and 31% approval. That's not what I'd like to see if I'm either senator. Now, neither of them are up for election this year, so I think it's a fairly moot point. They don't really have to worry about this for now, and they've got plenty of time to rebuild that image. Now, moving to Trump's approval, I think that's a little bit more important because whether he likes it or not, he is on the ballot this November, and whether other Republicans like it or not, he is on the ballot this November. So looking at his approval, 39% approve, 54% disapprove. That's fairly abysmal in a state that Trump won in November 2024. A majority of independents disapprove here. That is, again, we talked about independents previously with your previous guest. That is not what I'd like to see if I'm a Republican on the ballot heading into the elections. And I would say it's possible that it's even worse now. I don't think that things have changed drastically for the better since we took this poll in 2025. So there's no light at the end of the tunnel here for Republicans.
And jumping back to Democrats, even though Senators Jackie Rosen and Catherine Cortez Masto aren't on the ballot in November, could this kind of disappointment with them hurt the possibility of a blue wave in November?
I don't think so. These waves tend to be fueled more so by national politics. And Trump commands such a force that is difficult to counter by Democrats. I think that Democrats don't have to do much in order to keep the blue wave going. We saw it in 2025 already. I don't think that folks tend to approve of Democrats in Congress. We see that pretty consistently in the polling. But it doesn't end up hurting them when we see waves like this, which I do think is coming. I think that we're going to see a continuation of the 2025 races in 2026. So no, I don't think it matters all that much. And there's frankly a short memory for the electorate. I think that they'll forget pretty quickly about Rosen and Cortez Masto's actions during the government shutdown.
And is there anything unique about Nevada this election, or anything about Nevada that jumps out to where maybe, or is it just a familiar story that you're hearing in other states?
It's somewhat familiar for sure. I think one thing that's worth pointing out are the top issues. The economy is 39%, housing affordability, 16%. That economy number is pretty high. We do see that across the country, but it's especially high here. that housing number is not quite as high as we've seen elsewhere. So if you compare it to somewhere like California, then we see it in the 20s or even 30s. So I don't think it's quite the top issue as it is in some of the other states. But nevertheless, when you look at those two issues, a majority of the electorate say that either the economy or housing affordability is a top issue for them. Affordability is going to be the game here.
Definitely. That issue is not going away anytime soon. We are out of time, but thank you so much, Matt, for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Lucia Starbuck, and you've been listening to Purple Politics Nevada.